The news yesterday that a Dallas nurse has contracted Ebola from a patient she cared for has reignited fears of the disease.
Such fears have prompted the U.S. to adopt stricter screening measures at 5 airports and have some calling for travel bans from affected countries.
How does fear affect cultural behavior here and abroad? And how are West African communities who have seen over 4,000 Ebola deaths so far empowering themselves amid this crisis of fear?
With us now to discuss this is Greg Mittman, a professor of the history of science, medical history, and environmental studies at the UW-Madison. He was in Liberia this past summer and has recently written a piece in the New England Journal of Medicine called Ebola in a Stew of Fear. Greg, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start out with that stew of fear because it features prominently in your article. Your article begins with a meal, not in Liberia, but close enough where that fear was right there.
Well, it actually was in Liberia.
Oh, it was. Okay.
Yes, we were on the Liberia-Guinea border and in a very remote village about 2 days' drive from Monrovia. And I was with a community and an agricultural community, and they had cooked a meal for me and for our film crew at the time. Mm-hmm. And when I went down to eat it, they indicated that there was bushmeat in it. And I knew that bushmeat was a possible vector of the Ebola virus, had been following Ebola since March, since it had appeared. We had arrived in June. And there was definitely a fear that arose whether I should eat the stew or not.
And tell me a little bit about, because as the article goes on, your fear of that is sort of loaded. It has more dimensions than just a fear of simply eating that meal. There's a lot of history there that people don't know about, a history in Liberia of sort of being used for medical experimentation, if you will, fear on our side, just sort of watching things happen over there. Talk about those different layers of that fear, those things that made up some of the things you were thinking about when you were just trying to have a meal.
Yeah, in the piece I talk about an ecology of fear, which is a term that was introduced a number of years ago by the writer Mike Davis, and it evokes the notion that fear, while it's certainly universal, it takes on different flavors in different places, dependent upon the historical and cultural and political conditions in particular areas. And one of the things that prompted me to write that piece was in late July, when there was beginning to be international media attention on the Ebola outbreak because of two American healthcare workers that were infected, there was a lot of Western media coverage that was focusing on the, quote, irrational fears of West Africans attacking healthcare workers, which we saw in Guinea and some parts of Liberia, without any understanding of the historical and cultural context of why that may have happened. And one of the reasons that happened was because there has been a long history of medical experimentation in West Africa, in Liberia. The reason I was there was looking at the history of a 1926 Harvard expedition to Liberia that was sampling populations for biological materials. And in many ways, Liberia has been a laboratory for American biomedical research over the 20th century.
And that was the really interesting part of this for me, was the fact that you were there retracing these steps and that there is that history there. So when we talk about it, or Western media looks at it as being irrational, we say that not knowing any of this history. Tell me a little bit more about your work trying to retrace those steps, what that history was in 1926, why they were there in the first place, and then how that history plays out all these years later, almost a century later.
So this expedition was there at the time when Firestone had negotiated a lease from the Liberian government for 1 million acres of land to grow rubber. At the time, Britain held a monopoly on the world rubber trade, and the U.S. was seeking places where it could grow rubber free from British control. One of the major obstacles in establishing a plantation was disease. You needed a healthy labor force. And so this expedition was the leading researchers in the world in tropical medicine, and they were doing a survey, a biological and medical survey of populations to look at issues around disease and to really identify a healthy labor force for Firestone. Firestone would then develop what would become the world's largest rubber plantation, and Liberia became the major source of rubber to the United States during the Second World War as it was cut off from Malaysian markets. And because of that intimate relationship, that close relationship between Liberia and the U.S., it became this laboratory. So in the 1940s and 50s, Liberia was one of the first places that in tropical Africa where there was widespread use of DDT and testing of DDT for malaria eradication. In the 1970s, there was experiments there being done on the development of hepatitis A and B vaccine. So those memories certainly run deep in the populations within Liberia. I mean, for example, those people that were tested on in the 1970s would have been children. They're now in their middle age now. And that memory certainly plays a part in the way in which we see, for example, conspiracy theories emerging in Liberian media about, well, maybe Ebola was manufactured in terms of American biomedicine and so forth. So we see that kind of memory and lingering, I think, in some of the reactions.
So tell me the differences in media coverage of Ebola in Liberia, and then as you observe the Western coverage of that, the deaths in Liberia, you know, there have been, 3,500 or so deaths from Ebola in America. There's been one?
Correct.
Something like that?
Who is a Liberian national.
But sure, it feels bigger here to us. How does it feel in Liberia? How does it sound in Liberia? What are you seeing in Liberian media?
Well, one of the things is that the fears are changing over time. And for example, initially, where there was this suspicion of healthcare workers in Liberia, that has changed as healthcare workers themselves became infected and died. And one of the prominent things I'm seeing in Liberia right now, we're covering a lot of Liberian social media, is a real reaction against the Western media coverage that portrays West Africa as a place of incompetence, that as a place of irrationality, as a place of only poverty. And so we're seeing a real effort among musicians and artists in Liberia to create alternative messages. We see a lot of songs coming out using hip-hop artists, rap artists, that are using music to develop public service announcements around Ebola.
And in fact, we've got an example of that right here. This is a clip from a song that's called Ebola in Town.
Ebola, Ebola in town.
Don't touch your friend.
No touching. No eating something.
It's dangerous.
Ebola, Ebola in town.
Don't touch your friend.
No kissing. No eating something.
It's dangerous.
That's Ebola in Town, and that is something that I think a lot of us have already heard because it's been distributed fairly widely. Are efforts like this sort of Liberian homegrown efforts having the desired impact? Are people paying attention?
In Liberia, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, there was early on in the outbreak a suspicion about whether Ebola was in fact real or not, whether there's a large mistrust of government going back to the civil war in Liberia, and a question about whether Ebola was manufactured by the government, the idea of it was manufactured by the government to get outside aid. Those kinds of suspicions have, I think, largely subsided, and people are taking it quite seriously. People are taking it quite real. But one of the things that we're seeing now is a real fear about the stigmatization that's happening as the fears are heightened in the U.S. towards West Africans. So in the last couple of days, I've seen a social media campaign coming out of Liberia that says, of people holding signs saying, I am Liberian, I am not a virus.
And so, and we're seeing that reflected here in America, of course, politicians calling for travel bans and that sort of thing. This kind of reaction, though, I think is fairly, is it typical to events like these when something sort of unknown is going to come here, everybody wants to just sort of shut the doors?
Certainly this impulse to isolation and a kind of stigmatization of foreigners has a long history of epidemics in America. I mean, you know, a classic example is in the turn of the century in the early 1900s when plague came to San Francisco and there was an isolation of Chinese Americans. Chinatown was quarantined, a stigmatization of Chinese Americans as seen as disease-ridden and filthy and so forth that generated a kind of xenophobic reaction. And I think we're seeing some of that playing out again in this case, but now being directed towards West Africans.
We're talking this hour about how fears over Ebola are affecting cultural behaviors here and in West Africa, and we'd like to hear from you.
Are you afraid of Ebola? Do you get fearful, stressed out as you read the news stories from West Africa and closer to home? If you have ties to West Africa, people there, you're from there. I'd like to hear your story and what you're hearing from that region. And how do you see fear affecting the way our communities, our nation, our healthcare providers are responding to the Ebola outbreak? You can join us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
Ebola, Ebola, don't touch your friend, don't touch it.
We're talking about fear that surrounds the outbreak of Ebola in West Africa, also the headlines here in the United States, and you can join the conversation. Are you afraid of Ebola and what might happen if it spreads? How do you see that kind of fear affecting the way people might interact with each other? What can we do to calm such fears? And if you have connections, ties with West Africa, interested in what you're hearing from maybe back home or from people you've known there. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking with Greg Mittman, professor of the history of science, medical history, and environmental studies at UW-Madison. He spent quite a bit of time in Liberia most recently this past summer. You know, we've been talking a lot about fear, and in some ways, you know, I think fear is sort of hardwired into people. But you also talk about the idea of fear having an ecology. And can you tell me what you mean by that?
Yeah, so, there are certain universal fears that are kind of, as you said, hardwired into us, fear of death, obviously. But a lot of fears are produced by the historical and cultural circumstances in which we grew up and in which we live. And, you know, I think we see different fears arising, say, in Liberia when the Ebola outbreak appeared, connected to mistrust in government, kind of concerns about the whether government would be effective or not, concerns when there was a quarantine placed by the government on West Point that generated a riot as people did not have access to food and other resources as they were shut off. So there are particular circumstances in which fear arises. In the case of the U.S., I think, there are certain Western stereotypes about West Africa that go back really to the 18th century of thinking of West Africa as the white man's grave that linger on in a kind of cultural memory and portray a kind of stereotype of West Africa as a place of deadly disease.
So when you talk about that ecology, it almost sounds like it's that ecology is rooted in sort of a place and a culture and a geography almost.
Right, exactly.
Let's go to the phones right now. By the way, if you'd like to join in, 800-642-1234. And we begin with Emmanuel, who joins us from Madison. Hi.
Hi, thank you very much for having me on, and thank you to Professor Greg Mittman.
Sure, thank you for calling. What would you like to tell us?
First of all, I want to begin by saying that I'm from Liberia. Here I study at UW-Madison. I'm from Liberia, and I spent a lot of time in Liberia, too, during the summer. I was actually there when the disease hit Monrovia. And talking about fear, I think Professor Mittman is right. when we were there, when I was there, when the disease hit Monrovia, I think some of the earlier coverage in the Western media was that we West Africans, we were afraid of Western medicine. There were all a lot of news that were not really correct to what was going on the ground. And I just want to point out that even as sophisticated as the U.S. is, an Ebola patient that has been treated here, somebody came down with a disease. So it just shows how difficult this disease is to deal with. So poor country like Liberia with poor health infrastructure after long years of civil unrest, if the disease started spreading and people started to talk about us, as simply say, we don't know what we're doing, I think that was a little bit unfair because as you can see it today. So I just want to say that it's a serious problem. We are still fighting it, but people are becoming to understand the disease. People are becoming to fight it more aggressively. I know it's at a worse situation right now, but sooner or later, I think it's going to get better.
Emmanuel, thanks so much for the call. And that was a very interesting call, somebody who was actually there when everything started to happen. But what about his points, the sort of the perceptions that Emmanuel made about Western media? We've talked a little bit about that, but from his perspective, you were spot on. Western media is not very kind to Liberians and their ability to handle this themselves.
Right. I think Emmanuel makes an excellent point. And I remember, I think it was in August when Tom Frieden, director of the Centers for Disease Control, spoke about the outbreak in West Africa and said, the CDC, we know how to contain this, with a kind of American arrogance and kind of technological optimism, if you will, that I was a little suspicious about, for one, not knowing what the cultural conditions were and the public health infrastructure might have been in Liberia. But also, I think we're seeing that play out that today, now in Dallas, where a nurse has been infected. So, you know, in a very highly contained, high-tech hospital environment in the United States, how difficult it is to not become contaminated. And so you can think about the environment, right, in which a nurse in the U.S. has been infected compared to Liberia, where you have very weak health infrastructure, where you have conditions in which you don't have air conditioning, right? And people are in these hazmat suits. And so people are trying their best. And that we continually, the Western media continually portrays this area as a place of incompetence, I think isn't panning out now that we see our ability or inability to keep healthcare workers protected in the United States.
So the longer this story goes on, do you see any of that storyline changing? And do you expect it to change now that we've got Ebola here in the U.S.?
Well, as I said, I do think the storyline is changing in Liberia. I do see a lot more positive messages coming out of Liberia. One of the things that we see in the Western media is what we like to call epidemic porn, where we have all this focus on people dying in front of hospitals, this kind of morbid fascination with the disease. If you follow Liberian social media and news sites, what you see are a lot more positive stories about the people that have survived through Ebola, right? There's 40% people are surviving this. It's not 100% death rate. It's not a complete death sentence. And we're seeing more and more of those positive stories in Liberia, but they're not making their ways into Western media. We're not seeing the stories about Liberian healthcare workers and burial workers who are on the front lines every day and who have managed not to become infected.
Let's go back to the phones and take a call from Chris, who joins us from Monticello. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I am glad to hear you talking about this. I want to say that I listen to NPR all the time and WPR, and so I've been following this Ebola since it's been like less than 100 people infected. And in the last few months, we've heard it, where it was just an African problem, and now healthcare workers are coming back to the United States, and now we've just had the one man from Liberia come And now we have a case here. And what I'm, you know, I'm afraid, and I do live with this fear, like, every day. And I try to tell myself it is somewhat, that there's a slim chance that I personally am going to get it. But I also want to hear what your guest says about the, I'm afraid that it's becoming politicized here in the United States, and I'm worried that we're still not getting really the right information. I do want to hear the rates of survival just as much as I want to hear the rates of death as well. And I just wonder how, if he feels we're getting like the information we should be getting.
All right, Chris, good question. Let's put it to you. What about the politicization of this? What kind of information are we getting?
Well, I think it is becoming very politicized, and it's very much tied into a anti-immigration rhetoric. I mean, I think the cause for isolation of West Africa, the cause for quarantine of West Africa that we're seeing happening is very political. I would say that if West Africa, if Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea were major trading partners of the U.S., we would not be seeing these calls for isolation and quarantine, because one of the things that isolation and quarantine does is it also restricts free flow of trade.
So if this were China, it would be a different story.
If this were China, it would be a different story. If this were the 1940s and 50s, when Liberia was a major supplier of rubber to the United States, it would be a different story.
Well, unfortunately, we are out of time, but thanks so much for being with us today, Greg.
Thank you, Gene.
We've been talking with Greg Mittman, professor of the history of science, medical history, and environmental studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.